It's a pretty grey morning here in Belfast in Northern Ireland. On one of the football pitches in front of me, a squad of athletic and, it's got to be admitted, mostly blonde Swedish footballers are going through their paces in preparation for a match against Northern Ireland tomorrow. Watching from the side, and a bit greyer than the players, but still very athletic looking, is their coach, Pia Sundhage. Occasionally she barks out an order, but also offers a lot of encouragement to her players. I'm Jane Garvey, and welcome to the second in our series The Managers from the BBC World Service. We're meeting some of the top coaches in world sport, exploring the secrets of their trade, trying to find out what it takes to coach that little bit extra out of elite sports people, getting them from fourth or fifth place to gold medalists, Grand Slam winners or world champions. Pia grew up playing with the boys' teams in her remote village in the north of Sweden, and had to use a boy's name so she could carry on playing. After a record-breaking career with the Swedish team as a player, scoring 71 goals in over 140 games, she turned to coaching, winning double Olympic gold with the USA team and becoming FIFA Coach of the Year in 2012. She's now back in her home country preparing this Swedish team for the 2015 World Cup in Canada. Pia's a footballing phenomenon, a deep thinker about the game and how to get the best out of players. And that can involve singing Bob Dylan to them. Pia, I'm desperate to know about the very first time you remember kicking a football or even just seeing one.
I'm a couple of years old in a small village. And the girls in the village, they toss the ball like this.
Yeah.
And for whatever reason, I just wanted to kick it. And I played with the boys because back then you were not supposed to kick the ball if you were a girl. So you have this expectation of a girl, she should do this, and boys, they should do this. And I just loved to kick that ball. And I remember there is a car. It is a wall, and I challenged myself just, and I had a brother. He wasn't that good kicking the ball, but anyway, we competed, and I competed with the neighbors. And just that wonderful feeling, you can do something with the ball, with your feet, and then you can actually improve that, do a little more with the left foot. And I clearly remember this, but also where you put two stones here as a goal, two stones here as a goal. And then we said, wow, I'm Sweden, West Germany, it was Soviet, we are Brazil or whatever. And went on and on forever and ever. That's how it all started.
And no one ever said to you, Pia, you shouldn't be doing that, or why aren't you throwing the ball?
No, not really. We were playing, you know, children that want to play, and that's exactly what I did. So instead of going where all the girls were, I went to the boys. And but one thing happened every weekend. The boys, they got a chance to play a real game with referees, and they had this, it was Mårbäck, so they had white and blue jerseys, and I wasn't allowed. I was excluded because I was a girl. I truly thought that I was the only girl in the whole world that loved to play football. And I said, what the heck, I just wait for the ball and boys and then we'll play on Monday. One day, the coach came up to me and he said, what about, do you want to play a real game? And he made my day. Well, yes. And then he said, well, we need to cheat a little bit. And I knew from my mom and dad, you should not cheat. But, what are we going to do? Well, we just change your first name a little bit. My name is Pia, but we will call you Pelle. And that's a boy's name. Wow, that's great. Because, the name Pelle allowed me to play football.
And at what point did the boys become aware that you were maybe, well, somewhat threatening? Because you were good. You were better than a lot of them.
Well, I think after a couple of years when I played, we moved at the same time to a bigger city, 8,000 people. You're living in that
bigger city.
Yeah, Ulricehamn. But at that time, I changed school as well. So my friends, my neighbors, they love this. Wow, we have some. She's special. She's unique. She's odd. She's not like everybody else. And that's something I brought from my family as well. My mother said, well, that's fine. You don't have to be as everybody else. You're somebody, and that's fine. And I think that the boy's the same thing. So when I moved, I was shy, so I had a hard time to get friends. My little sister, she's 3 years younger than I am, and my little brother, we went to the same school. They got friends immediately. I did not. So I, what do you do when you're a little bit uncomfortable? Well, I took my friend, I took a tennis ball, actually. So I was jogging with a tennis ball, and one of the boys, he came up to me, Peter, he said, hey, do you play football? Yeah, I do. Because they were playing on a field. And I said, yeah, I do. Well, you're a girl. Yeah, I suppose so. and then he invited me, and I was included in the boys' team, and we played this class, 4A, I think it was, and then we played every day in school. But I have to prove that I was good enough. Yeah. And I clearly remember this because another class said, well, you have a girl playing. Well, girl, she's with the boys. And so I have to prove. And that's, I think that's one of my, you know, my whole life has been, I have to prove that I'm good enough. As a girl wanted to just kick the ball, as an elite player, I want to compete on the highest level. As a coach, I want to, go coaching courses. I was the only one with all men and so forth. Still today, sometimes I think I really have to prove that I'm good enough.
Your parents sound brilliant.
Are they
very proud of what you have achieved? And they do sound like they could not have given you a better start in terms of just allowing you to be you. Not questioning what you did.
Yeah, I think you're right. When I look back, they don't live any longer, but when I look at my sister and brothers, they have the same. When I look at my parents, we say they allowed us to be what we want to be. So I was the kind of girl I wanted to be, and almost like a boy, and I loved it because that allowed me to play football. My dad, he was, you feel like you're secure when you come home. A lot of humor. Laughed a lot, and it's okay to make a mistake. Oh, yeah, just if you make a mistake, that's fine. Just come back and make sure you don't make that same mistake again. My mother, she was like, when we talk about my dad, we said both feet on the ground. My mother, on the other hand, she gave me wings. You can do whatever you want. She wanted me to be a pop star, singing. And I think this football, is that your thing? Wouldn't you be a pop star and play a guitar instead? And she was, so I felt that I could do whatever I wanted.
Can you give me an example of bad coaching that you had when you were a player?
bad coaching, I wouldn't say necessarily bad, when it didn't work for me. Because that kind of coaching could work for you. So I'm very sensitive and careful to say this is bad or good. I would say, well, this is my kind of coaching. I prefer this, and I do not prefer this. And one thing I've learned, that you have to be yourself. It's so important, because then I can work on, I know my strength and my weaknesses. So bad or good coaching, what I experienced as a player when I was inspired, that is for me good coaching. And I had a coach, I'm not answering your question, I'm talking about a good coach, and that's...
Don't worry, I'll make you answer the question.
It's Ulf Lifors. She was a national coach for national team, and he included me in discussing football, different situations, not only this is how we're going to do, what do you think about if you change this, and sitting around a table and discuss, including me, and listening. Another coach did the same thing, because I had so many questions. I wanted to learn. I have that from coming from inside. Football is such a wonderful sport. I want to learn everything right now, right here. When I was not inspired and I was threatened, or I was annoyed, or I was hard to find the right English words, but I didn't like the situation. It's somebody saying, well, I'm the coach, you're going to do what I'm telling you. But that kind of coaching, just saying, this is what I'm going to do because I'm the coach. I did not like that.
And it didn't work for you? It would never have worked?
No, it didn't work for me.
I mean, I've not come within a trillion miles of representing my country at any sport, obviously. And there are many reasons for this, not least my total lack of sporting ability, but I've fantasised about it. Like, I mean, I defy anyone who, with an interest in sport, who hasn't had those dreams. And it's so nerve-wracking, the notion that you could make a mistake and ruin your country's chances of winning a trophy, winning a medal. How do you teach people not to worry about making those mistakes? Or can you just, can you do it, in fact? Is it possible?
It is just a game.
But it's not just a game.
Yeah, well, it is actually. It is a game. Yeah. If you have that feeling, this is a game you love, and you really want to bring out the best performance because you love it, not because this is a cup final or it's a very important game. If you know, in the States, they talked about to play under pressure. I learned that it's a privilege to play under pressure. We love to, you know, embrace the pressure. They are the best. The Americans are the best with this.
And why? Why are they the best?
I think they're used to it, and they've been winning so many times, and it's contagious. When that pressure, sometimes it's almost too much. What if we lose? But then when it happens to me, then I go back to why did I start to play football? Well, in the very beginning, I wasn't allowed. So for me, it's pretty simple to grab that feeling. So this is a football game, and there are so many situations out there that's challenging, that is fun, that you're longing for. It's not that gold medal. For me, it's football so much more than gold. And I do that with the team. I can tell when a little bit, ooh, we have to. No, you don't have to do. Well, the only thing you have to do is do your very best.
You mentioned that the Americans were used to success and operated on that level. What about when you worked in China, which was before you did the American job? What was the atmosphere around the game like there?
It's similar. Now as assistant coach, which is slightly a little bit different, but still the football is all over the world. We have the same language. I do not speak Chinese, which made it a little bit challenged. But on the field, you pretty much talk the same kind of language. And they have the same, at the time we were trying to win the World Cup 2007, and everybody put together something, we're going to go that direction. And Marika Domanski-Lyfors, coach for the team, she decided the road, so to speak, the journey, and what kind of football we're going to play and so forth. But everybody was on that road. Everybody was on the same goal, and it's pretty much the same. I thought they took orders more so. If you want them to go from A to B and then to C, well, they went to A to B, here I am, okay. Well, you're supposed to go to C, yeah? They just waited for order a little bit. I thought, we wanted to create a little bit of a chaos. You know, take the initiative, it's your game. And I think we succeeded a little bit, but not, well, we didn't play the finals. I don't think we were that successful. But.
Well, I mean, it depends how you define success, I guess.
True.
Yeah, I mean, you just said it's true. It's nothing we should get all that worried about. But you see, deep down, you clearly, and you've had a huge success, you care passionately about winning, don't you? You must.
Otherwise, I wouldn't be the coach for the Swedish national team, because everybody expects the team, the coach, everybody to look at the goal and want to win the next game. And we've been successful. Chinese team, we've been playing finals. US team and even Swedish team, we've been playing the finals. The last time Sweden played the finals, 2003 in the World Cup. So, of course, you try to find a way to win.
Well, you mentioned her. Let's hear from her now. This is Marika Domanski-Lyfors. You were assistant to her when she was the boss of the Chinese national team, and she is now technical director with the Swedish FA.
Well, I had known Pia for such a long time, and we have always talked about working together. We were working together at a federation before that, and we always talked about working together. So for me, that was quite natural, so to ask her, because we wanted to do something together. And I also knew that she's the person, if you want a person who really is dedicated for football, you should take Pia. And that was the real choice, and the best choice I could get. I thought she should be a coach, because she was always coaching on the field, in the training sessions, and talking about football situations and tactics and so on. So I thought she should be a coach, and I thought I should be a coach also, because we had a lot of discussions about everything about football.
What about when you were playing? Did you enjoy the moment after a great victory or a great goal or just a great performance?
Oh yeah.
You did?
Yeah. They made fun of me because when I scored a goal, we were 6-0 up in the club team, and I scored a seventh, and I was, yeah, I scored a goal. Yeah, here she goes again. I'm a happy person, and I think it's contagious, the fact that inside, as a player, I wanted to score goals, and I wanted to, or assist or whatever. And if that happened, I achieved something, well, I'm the first one to celebrate. I'm pretty good at that, to celebrate.
Right. I mean, what about when you were a kid? Because I watch small children play football, and nobody ever passes it, do they? I mean, all they want to do is
glory hunters, little
tiny ones, but actually, and a bit older than that as well in some cases. Do you remember the first time you actually did do a good assist, allowed someone else to score a great goal? You see, you don't remember, do you? You remember your great goals?
Nah. You know, it was, I remember we played in the school, I'm 10 years old at the time, and I can remember that field, and I can also remember a good feeling. We played some good games, and if you look, well, you'd be around children, be around a team that going in that direction. It's a great feeling inside, and it's not only the goals. If you would ask me about the goals I've scored, some of them. 84 when we won the European Championship.
Ja, Sverige har vunnit. Pia Sundhage sträcker, som ni ser, jublande armarna i skyn, och Sverige har vunnit.
But it's more like overwhelming feeling than being part of something that is successful.
I remember reading, or actually hearing, I think Bobby Charlton describe the moments after England. I know we always go on about England winning the World Cup, but we do
66.
In England anyway. Yes, in 1966, yeah, and he the final whistle went and he fell to the ground, and I think it was him, it might have been another player, but said that they'd never felt, in a way, sadder in their entire life, because they knew that, to be honest about it, life had peaked. That it was never, ever, ever going to be that good again.
Oh, brother.
I'm
the opposite. When, the latest, 2012, Wembley. Mm. You can imagine, I'm a football player, I'm standing, coaching in Wembley Stadium. That's huge.
And this is the USA.
The USA
winning
against Japan. Yeah. And I could see the watch. I'm not looking at the game the last 5 seconds. I still remember it. And I'm looking, and because, you know, they add extra times and so forth. And I can see the referee and feel it. Now, that's it. We won. And turning and just jumping, because I wanted to share that happiness with my coaches, first of all, because we did it. I'm absolutely useless alone. But around people, where we boost each other and do different things, I think I'm pretty good. And
so people that wasn't sad. That wasn't really.
No, joy.
Yeah.
A sad moment though was my last game in the national team, 1996, in the Olympics.
As a player,
that was as awful. I can still feel it inside. We won against Denmark 3-1, I think it was. And everybody was happy. We didn't advance to the quarterfinal. We had USA and we had China in the same group, and they played the final. So we had to go home. But it was not so much more than go home. I knew that I was in my last game. I was crying. That was awful. And I had friends around, and my assistant coach, he came up to me and said, "You know, we won." "Yeah, this is my last game. I will never, ever play again." I can feel that. That was a sad moment. Oh, boy.
And at that time, were you absolutely certain you were going to be a coach?
Oh, I was a coach. I was playing coaching before that. So I have not made a decision that I'm going to be coach. The next day I was coaching a little bit more.
But you were in mourning at that moment for your playing career.
Bad.
But you are genuinely still moved by that moment, aren't you?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And that's why, I imagine, is one of many reasons why you're such a good coach, because you really do know what it's like.
Well, I know how I felt, and I really try to understand how it feels out there when I'm coaching. Because it's one thing to coach a game, watch a game, compared to actually playing in it. So that's why, I think that's one of the reasons why I'm become a better listener, and trying to understand what they're actually saying. It's not that when we have pregame talks, for instance, or we analyze the games. It's not that this is what we see. Yes, that's a part of it. But how does it feel? How is it possible we didn't use the right side, or why didn't we turn in the middle of the field, or whatever it is?
But it is possible, isn't it, for an average player, or even someone who's never played at any high level, to become a really good manager?
Oh yeah, I think so, if you have the passion for it. Now, that is one of my strengths, I think, the fact that I can feel the game, but we've had a lot of good coaches. Sven-Göran Eriksson, for instance. You know,
well, you would mention him.
Yeah, of course. He didn't play that many games on the highest level, but he's a fantastic coach. So it's obviously he has all the strength than I have. But I'm aware of my strength, and I think that's one of the fact that I can try. I try to understand, and I try to also understand the feelings out there.
Pia, thank you very much for the time being. We're going to talk more about your journey, of course, from Pella boy footballer in Sweden to Pia Olympic gold medalist here on the BBC World Service.
The BBC World Service, the home of international news.
The city of Tacloban just looks destroyed. It is an apocalyptic scene.
In a constantly changing world, more than 5 million people a month turn to one program for global news.
Look, we haven't been speaking for 35 years. We just talked more in 30 hours than we have in those prior 30 years.
A compilation of international stories from the BBC's award-winning news teams.
Anybody that gives a safety certification for a product that is going to make women very, very sick does have responsibility.
Updated twice a day and only available online.
And there are people here who've travelled great distances, desperate to get their hands on that elusive prize, a ticket to Sachin Tendulkar's final test match.
Listen online or download at bbcworldservice.com/globalnews.
I'm Jane Garvey, and welcome back to Belfast in Northern Ireland, where I've come to meet the double Olympic gold medal-winning football manager Pia Sundhage in the second part of our series on the best coaches in sport here on the BBC World Service. Stay with us as we find out more about Pia as a coach and the techniques and ideas that have made her a double Olympic gold medalist with the US women's team and a FIFA Coach of the Year. And there might even be more singing.
BBC News. 10 Chinese road workers are missing following an attack in their camp in northern Cameroon, close to the border with northeastern Nigeria, the stronghold of the Islamist group Boko Haram. One worker is reported to have been killed. Across the border in Nigeria, witnesses say 11 people were killed in a separate attack by suspected Boko Haram militants. The attacks came as the presidents of Nigeria and Cameroon attended a meeting in Paris to discuss ways of tackling Boko Haram. The French president, François Hollande, who hosted the summit, described Boko Haram as a threat to the whole of Western and Central Africa. The man who'll be India's new Prime Minister, Narendra Modi, has arrived in the Indian city of Varanasi, where he's been greeted by jubilant supporters. Mr. Modi, who led his BJP party to a landslide victory in the general elections, is performing religious ceremonies in Varanasi, regarded as a holy city by India's Hindus. A military aircraft with government officials on board has crashed in northern Laos. The defence minister, Duang Chai Pidjit, and his wife are reported to have been killed, along with at least three other senior officials. Floods in Bosnia and Serbia, the worst in more than a century, have now killed at least 20 people. Entire towns have been evacuated. Tens of thousands of people have been forced to flee. The Turkish authorities say the last two bodies have been retrieved from the Soma coal mine and the rescue operation is now over. During a visit to Soma, the energy minister said a total of 301 people had died. Hundreds of anti-gay activists have rallied in the Georgian capital Tbilisi, demanding the abolition of an anti-discrimination law recently passed by Parliament. Correspondents say the law ensuring equal rights for minorities has divided opinion in a country where homosexuality is rarely tolerated. BBC News.
Welcome back to The Managers from the BBC World Service. I'm Jane Garvey, and for the second of this series, I'm in Belfast to meet the double Olympic medal-winning soccer coach, Pia Sundhage, who's here managing the Swedish women's team as they take on Northern Ireland. In the first half of the programme, we heard how Pia's footballing life began as a schoolgirl in Sweden and how she had to use a boy's name in order to carry on playing. We talked too about her playing career and then her move into coaching. In the second half of our conversation, I really want to know about the time she was made coach of the US women's team, at the time bitterly divided over the exclusion of their goalkeeper, Hope Solo. How she overcame that poisonous atmosphere to bring that team together. So much so that they went on to win Olympic gold in 2008 and 2012. We're speaking in this series to coaches of teams and of individuals, and it's really fascinating to find out the different methods they each use to work with, or frankly simply to cope with, the personalities of these hugely talented people. The coach and athlete don't have to like each other, but they do have to want the same thing and share the same goals. And I really want to get Pia's view on this as we continue our conversation here on the BBC World Service. Welcome back. We're in conversation with Pia Sundhage, who's the coach of the Swedish women's football team. Pia, you've had a hugely successful career. You've played for Sweden, coached all over the world. Your biggest job, I know that Sweden's a big job for you now, but your biggest job in the past that people will know you from is when you were coach of the American football team, USA. And you joined the team at a particularly interesting, some would say challenging time. This was December of 2007. Describe the atmosphere in that USA team at the time.
I felt that they were disappointed the fact that they did not win the World Cup 2007. So they wanted a change, and that is important. They wanted a change, and I was the change. When I took the flight over to Los Angeles, I was, wow, what am I doing?
Well, how did you get the job? I mean, tell me how it all came about.
I think the reason why I got a job is actually Kristen Lilly, a little bit, because I coached her in Boston Breakers.
And she is?
She is the most capped player in the U.S. And I coached her in Boston Breakers, and I was the coach of the year that year. So I've been in the country and coaching. So anyway, when I took the flight, I thought, oh, who am I taking care of the, you know, coaching the best team in the world?
Well, but that's what we call imposter syndrome, isn't it? You were doubting yourself, which is a very female thing to do.
Yeah, and it took a couple of minutes, and I said, ah, what the heck? If I'm not successful, I could just take the same flight back.
Yeah.
One thing I do know is the game. So my very first meeting with the team, we had a lunch, looked around, and you have players like Abby Wambach, Hope Solo, Kate McGrath, and players I know very well.
Really experienced.
Oh,
as well.
Yeah. And I'm thinking, okay, what am I supposed to say? They wanted a change, and here I have my chance, like a kickoff, sort of. And I knew the change couldn't be too big, because then we'll lose the confidence. But it couldn't be too small either, because they wouldn't even recognize it. So I was myself. So I stood in front of the team and I looked around and I said, come gather around people wherever you roam, and admit that the waters around you have grown, and accept it that soon you'll be drenched to the bone. If your time to you is worth saving, then you better start swimming or you sink like a stone. For the times, they are a-changing. I was a change. So I started.
Your mother was right, you can.
Oh, thank you. So I started off there and I looked at, I remember Abby Warmer, she was looking around like this. What the heck is going on? But, very, very important, they turned it to be a good time, because they were giving me a big hand. Here we go, here we go. And I had my start. So I took the opportunity, which is in coaching, timing. Priorities are very important in timing. And I thought, this is my time. So I took the opportunity to say, well, here I am. That will be changed, but I can't do it on my own. So that was my first, I felt that they wanted me to be their coach.
You do seem to be the kind of person who wants to be liked, and that's not a criticism. I mean, it's a good thing, but how do you make unpopular decisions in that arena?
I think everybody wants to be liked, but...
Well, a lot of people don't seem to care very much.
Yeah, well, and don't get me wrong, the American players, I don't love them. Some of them I don't even like. Don't tell anybody.
Which ones are those?
However, I love the soccer player. The same thing with the team here in Sweden.
Okay.
Some of the players are boring. But that's fine. But
I want you to elaborate a bit on that. What's your definition of boring? Do you mean one-dimensional?
Well, now I'm talking about personalities.
Yeah, yeah.
And because I'm a certain person, you know, when you get connected almost. And I'm honest that some of the players, they're not as fun to talk to as some of them. However, and I do have my favorites, people know as well, but you don't have to be liked, but you have to be respected.
So you can admire the player and respect the player whilst finding the person, frankly, not someone you'd want to spend the day
with. I think I'm pretty good at that.
You think they know which ones you like personally and which ones you don't?
I don't know. And I don't care.
You really don't care?
Yeah.
Played in the space. Marta chases it down. There she is! Saved by Soto! She reached back. It sounded like post, but I thought her arm got it.
Oh, I think that was a save.
The American team then that you took over in 2007, you did have to make some tough decisions about players, didn't you? The goalkeeper in particular, is that right?
The story is, 2007, some many things happened with the team. They won the bronze medal, but the goalkeeper was excluded. She said different things and she hurt the team. So here we have Hope Solo, the best goalkeeper in the world. I listened to 5 different stories, what actually happened. That was the first thing I did. So tell me what happened, so I at least understand how serious it was. And I got 5 different stories. Well, I thought it was interesting.
This is from players or from...
From players, from the general manager, from the press officer, from the ex-coach, from myself. And I thought, okay, so what am I going to do? The goal was to win the gold medal at the Olympics. So I had some of the players coming in and we talked about the situation. I said, I don't expect you to forget. So many things happen. But I expect you to forgive and move on, because do you want to win? I want to win. Do you want to win?
Yeah, I want to win.
Okay. In order to win, you have to trust me. We need goalkeepers, not only one or two. And right now, Hope Solo probably is or will become the best goalkeeper in the world. So I sorted that out. I listened and I talked about it out loud. And I gave them time to think about it, so how they want to deal with this. And at the end of the day, I'm the one that decides what they're going to do. And then I talked to Hope herself, and she hesitated a little bit, of course, whether she wanted to continue or not. But at the same time, do you want to win? So, and I said the same thing, I don't expect you to forget. That will probably be impossible. So I gave the whole situation respect. I know what's happening, what happened, but can you forgive and move on?
Presumably, there's always going to be a certain amount of conflict within teams and in dressing rooms. Is it possible to avoid it, or is that crazy?
I think it's possible to avoid it, but if it occurs a little bit of a... what do you call? You don't have the same opinion of certain things. It's important to understand the role. I'll give an example. If we have a team and you send them it, and you have to understand the role, but also accept the role and respect the role. If you don't, then you will not have a good performance. And that is my job, to make sure that ongoing to have a discussion, a look at the situations, is this what we're looking for? Because maybe she wants to do something different. And you come across that fairly often, small details. And by looking at situation, by talking, listening, I think you can understand, accept and respect the role.
And so the fairy tale ending should have been that team won the World Cup in 2011, but it didn't.
It didn't.
History is made! The first Asian team to win the Women's World Cup. First the hosts, now the number one ranked team in the world, has fallen to the skills of the Japanese. Women's World Cup champions, 2011.
It was penalty kicks, and it was a tough time, but we played really good soccer. The reason why I survived that game...
It was against Japan.
Against Japan. It was extra time and penalty kicks and so forth. There's a couple things I've learned, but the reason why I could move on was we played well. Soccer, football is so much more than just that goal, but I'm so proud because that final is something special. Two, Japan is a team that it's never winning anything, you know, the gold medal. Or so now we have another team winning. That's good for the women's game.
Sure.
If you look at the bigger picture, okay.
But, I mean, all that's great. But what about
and
the
third? Hold on. The third one, the way they played,
okay.
Technical football, and it's not that it just packed it in front of the box and just counterattacked. They added something to the women's game.
There was an artistry.
Ah, yeah. So those three things, okay, it was hard. I had a hard time to move on, but I did because I thought about three things.
But what does the coach say in that dressing room after you lose a final on penalties?
I did not do a good job, I have to say that. I went back to the hotel and I had the whole team in front of me and I thanked them for... I don't ruin what I said. But I did not do a good job. I should have, and I did that with the Swedish team when we won the bronze medal. We didn't win the gold, but I learned from the Japan coach that you need to be grateful. The fact that we played good soccer and the fact that we played the final, I think it could have said so many good things about the team, about some of the players. And I didn't. And then they left and I had the coaches. And actually I started to cry. Because it could have been a fairy tale, it could be so, but I'm not proud of that either. But me, it's okay to make a mistake, and I did. If you can learn something from the biggest moment and from biggest coaches, then I had a chance to improve my coaching.
Ladies and gentlemen, please stand for the national anthem of the United States of America.
So when you won in London in 2012, you've spoken about your delight and your absolute joy and that ecstatic emotion. Did you cry then?
I did. I did a different kind of tears, of course. we achieved something we've been longing for, and we were working a lot in order to put everything together, and this is just what everybody, you know.
I mean, that was a remarkable game, wasn't it?
Well? It was, and it was exciting. I think it was 83,000 watching, and it's a great atmosphere. And that game is like the 2011. We just switched sides this time, and the Japanese coach and I and the team.
I mean, does it annoy you when, and I'm sure you've been asked this countless times, and I'm going to ask it too, about why so few, well, hardly any woman has got the chance to coach men at a high level? I mean, that will happen, won't it? Or you don't seem very certain.
Honestly, I don't know. I've got that question when I'm ready for coaching, and then one journalist, he said that you've been doing this and this and better and better, so it's about time to coach a man, almost like the next step. But I said, you know what, if I'm prepared for that. And I said, well, I think it's a little bit of insulting. I've been winning two gold medals with the U.S. team, Olympic gold medals. But I said, it's wrong, the question. The question would be, when are the men, the players, ready for a woman to coach? It has nothing to do with female coaches' ability. It's about, because you need, need to want it to be coached by a woman. You do have a country coached by a woman, and she a whole country. But when it comes to football, still it's a little bit sensitive. And I feel like, I think many of the female coaches, we need to prove that we know football.
And you're still feeling that, right?
Now, yeah.
Which is kind of how you started earlier on, by telling me how you're constantly feeling. You've got to prove to people that you're able and that you're in the right place.
Yeah.
How, when you take over a team, Pia, do you establish the shared goals of the team? And presumably you've got to do it really quickly.
Well, you started off with the goal, and then it's so important to get to know the team. So it's not that I'm just picking the goal, there we go, we need to do it together. And there are certain things that is important. I do have my philosophy, and I have the power to decide the journey to that goal. That's the beauty of to be a leader.
And what if a player challenges you? How do you deal with that?
My job is to make sure that she respects the team goal, so to speak, or my leadership. And it's ongoing discussion. It's ongoing looking at situations where are we actually doing what we're saying? Is that in a room or out on the field? It's so important to be almost like a mirror. So we have decided this. Are you acting like we decided?
Now you have this phrase, coach healthy, don't you? Mm. Which means what?
Well, instead of trying to fix every mistake, you put it on the screen, we can't do this, you have to do better than this, or this is not good enough. I do the opposite. So when it works, we have a video clip and we show them. They have comments, and I ask them, what do you see? What is good? Could it be better? And let them talk as much as possible. So coaching the healthy part. So let's say she has two good crosses, but we want, well, the game plan is she has at least five or seven. We say, well, you should do more of this. Just double it instead of looking at a cross where it didn't go well.
So never, ever, ever start with a negative.
I don't think I've ever done that. On the other hand, and this is important, it's because sometimes it's a misunderstanding. When I analyze the game with the coaches, we look at mistakes, of course. But analyzing one thing, coaching is another thing. So in order, we have analyzed that we don't have that many crosses on the right side. Then what? And then we show the right back, this is what we want. But maybe she's not playing the next game because she had only two crosses. So I think it's important to recognize and analyzing this is what we need to do the next game. But coaching, well, you know, you're almost there. It's okay to make a mistake. but try to, well, whatever it is.
Now, I mean, we're speaking on quite a cold day in Belfast. It's raining. It's nothing special today. Do you ever feel that, it's not for me today? Or have you still got the buzz about doing it?
I don't think I ever felt like, when it's out on the field. Because I'm running the drills in my head. We plan it, write it down, and then have the paper, and I'm thinking, I'm longing for see how she will be successful here. So today we have a shooting exercise, for instance, and we're going to play. I wonder if she is, how many shots and in the game, because we're shooting just before. So I'm constantly preparing, and after we talk, and then bang. Almost no soccer whatsoever when we dinner sometimes. For me, it's ups and downs like this. Sometimes it's so into it, and sometimes I have no clue what you're talking about because I'm not there.
So what about the player who is hugely naturally talented and doesn't work very hard? How do you approach that individual?
I try to coach how good she will become. So with her, try to paint a picture of so much more she can do, how successful she could be, not only what she's doing right now. I'm not telling her anything. I just want to give a heads up. And it's up to you whether you want to be on this level or if you want to take the next step. And what I do know is there are three things that motivate players. One is if you win. And she is successful. She's the best player, I'd say. The other thing is to be around a certain environment. You want to be in the team. I belong here. And the third thing is the fact that you improve. So if I can inspire her to grab that, well, you know what? I can do this as well. I can add something to my game. That is my job.
But what about the opposite? The player who really works hard but will never, for whatever reason, just isn't a gifted player.
I think that's the hardest part. But I think I've done, so in my job it's you select people, players, and she is not good enough. So she's not selected the next time. So that's tough. However, I think I've done a good job if I, through the camps, giving a heads up where, she needs to work on this and work a little bit different, not necessarily harder, and she won't make it anyways. So when I tell her, you will not pick the next time, if she's not surprised, then I think I've done a great job. A good job. Mm. But
is that the worst thing about your job then?
That's tough, because you really want to work, include people, but on the other hand, in order to get rid of that awful feeling when you exclude a person, a player, you do it for the good of the team. My job is to make sure you create a good team, so you can't be personal. And I go back to what is my job? What's the goal? And find a team that will win the next game. It sounds pathetic almost, but be grateful of the fact that you're healthy, you have a chance to wear yellow and blue, and here we go, here's another training. I don't care about the weather, I don't care, if it's a what kind of opponent, but it is football.
So what about now you're back home and you're coaching your home country? How is it a better job for you? Is this genuinely the best job of your life?
So when I was a coach for the US team, I have the best job in the world. Now I'm the coach for the Swedish team. I have the best job in the world. So let's say I got a chance.
That's
to coach.
That's a very diplomatic answer, but I'm not sure it's the
answer. Oh, yeah. If I go back and coach the US team, again, I would say, that is the best job in the world, because I'm the best one to be here and now. So whatever I'm doing right now, I'm been very fortunate, because I have great jobs all the time. So if I'm coaching Hammarby, playing and coaching Hammarby, or if I'm assistant coach in China, best job in the world.
You also sang for us, which was lovely, but I do gather that at one point your team sang to you. When was that?
They've been singing a couple of times, actually.
Oh, have they?
Yeah. It's funny, because I like that when the players, they make fun of you, then you come along quite a bit.
So who sang for you and why?
Well, one time was Abby Wambach playing the guitar. Wow. That, that was hilarious.
Is she no good?
She's okay.
Right. How did the USA team then celebrate your last game in charge of them?
In the best way. And I'm so grateful and happy because after the game, they showed, first of all, they showed a couple of videos where from 2008 to 2012. But also, they gave me a guitar.
And why don't you do something special from here, here at the Home Depot, because this is where it all began for us. 5 years ago,
first fantastic, all the signatures, autographs, and the best guitar. That is a puppy. So I'm really happy about that.
So we all know that Pia likes to sing. So on behalf of the team, we got her an autograph, signed guitar.
And do you play it or just look at it?
Oh, I play it all the time. It's a great guitar, and I look at it.
And what did you sing for them? I gather it was a 60s song.
Well, I sang 50 Ways to Leave Your Lover and I'm Leaving on a Jet Plane, and If Not For You.
Okay, and what did they sing to you?
You Are My Sunshine.
You are my sunshine, my only sunshine. You make me happy when skies are gray. You'll never know, dear, how much I love you. Please don't take my sunshine away.
You must have cried then.
Yeah, but yeah, that's a special moment.
But now you've left me, and you love another. You have shattered all my dreams. You are my sunshine, my only sunshine.
Pia, it's been really lovely talking to you. Thank you very much indeed for sharing all your experiences with us here on the BBC World Service. Managers was presented by me, Jane Garvey, and made in association with the Open University. It was produced by Richard McElroy. If you'd like to find out more about the business of football, then just go to the Sports Managers programme page on the World Service website and then follow the links to the Open University. Mm-hmm.